From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Renee Bodley Miller, who's sitting in for Pete Stoughton today. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Lynn. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited about getting to interview David Owen. I really appreciate that. And thank you, Pete, for letting me fill your shoes for a day.
You're a big David Owen fan. Well, we'll welcome him on in just a moment. Now, Helen Keller said that the problems of deafness are deeper and more complex, if not more important, than those of blindness. Mm. Deafness, she said, is a worse misfortune. About 37 million people suffer from some degree of hearing loss. Faced with the cost and the stigma of hearing aids, the natural human tendency, oh, and we all know who we are, it's to do nothing and hope for the best, usually while pretending that nothing is wrong. Our guest David Owen is a longtime renowned writer for The New Yorker and author of many books. In his new book, Volume Control, Hearing in a Deafening World, David argues this inaction comes with a huge social cost. David Owen, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Oh, thank you. Hello.
Hello. Let's start with a very personal story of yours, and I've heard it pronounced both ways, tinnitus or tinnitus. It is ringing in the ear. You have it.
Yes, I do. Yeah, doctors tend to say tinnitus, and civilians tend to say tinnitus. You can say either. It's a kind of a phantom ringing in the head. It's not really a sound. It's your brain circuitry making what sounds like noise, and it's there all the time. And unfortunately, there's no known cure, at least not yet.
Right. If there's no known cure, then I think the argument you make in the book is that if we don't address these types of partial hearing loss, then we'll have more grave hearing loss to follow up. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's generally true. People tend to think of hearing problems as problems of old people, but you know, they're problems of old people that begin with young people. It's the main damage that I've done to my own hearing, I did when I was a kid. When, you know, going to rock concerts, we always wanted to sit in front of the loudspeakers, the loudest part we could find. At home, I had these big JBL speakers, and I would lie on my floor and tilt them over my head so that they would be as loud as I could possibly make them. I mowed lawns and used power tools and, you know, shot rifles at camp and did all these things without ever thinking of protecting my ears, without ever being told that I ought to protect my ears. And, you know, I think parents would say, you know, don't snap towels at each other. Don't shoot BB guns at each other. You could blind yourself. But no one ever said, you know, be careful with firecrackers. You could ruin your hearing. It's this extraordinarily important sense. And yet we not only take it for granted, we don't even think about it.
Lynn and I were just laughing before the show, David, about here I am, a 52-year-old woman with my readers on. And, you know, we were both fighting that struggle to say, oh, I don't need glasses. I don't need readers. I'm not of that demographic yet. But here we are with our readers on. But people will notice their eyesight failing. They'll go to a doctor about that. But they don't go to a doctor about hearing loss for a long time. I think in your book you say 10 years is the average time it takes someone to go to a doctor and say, I think I've lost some hearing. Why is that?
You know, there are a lot of reasons. One is that very often, you know, hearing loss kind of creeps up on you. And it's often, your friends, your spouse, who notice it before you do. You can't hear them. You're constantly saying, what, huh? You know, I have friends who are exactly like that. It's also, there's a stigma to hearing loss. People will sometimes get glasses who have perfect vision because they like the way glasses look. And nobody does that with hearing aids. So there's, Charlie Rose, back when he was on TV, did an hour-long show on hearing loss, on hearing. They were talking about hearing aids, and he never once in that whole hour mentioned that he was wearing two hearing aids.
Oh, wow.
And the same was true. There was a Nobel Prize winning physicist on the same show, also with a hearing aid. You could see his hearing aid. He never mentioned it. And in both cases, I think it was that they were ashamed that they had hearing loss. They didn't want people to know that they had this sign of decrepitude, that they were this sign of old age, that they couldn't hear. And, you know, nobody feels that way about glasses. The physicist was wearing glasses. That didn't bother him. He would do that in public. But the hearing aid, even on a show that was about hearing aids, he couldn't bring himself to talk about.
Well, here in Park City and Heber Valley, the Wasatch Back, we have a pretty healthy population. We've got a lot of people who pride themselves on being athletes and healthy people. But sometimes one of the things they'll say is, you know, when I go to a restaurant, I have a hard time hearing. And, you know, usually it's a crowded restaurant. They can't hear the conversation at a table. What is it about a crowded restaurant that gets to us? And in your book, you accuse some restaurant owners of capitalizing on that effect to make money. That was really interesting.
Yeah, it's something that happens with age, and it may be something that just naturally happens with aging, or something that's caused by lifetime exposure to sound. When we're young, our brains have a better ability to focus on a particular speaker and to ignore things that are happening in the background, sounds in the background. We lose that as we get older, and so very often I've talked to people. I said, "Well, how's your hearing?" When I was working on the book, "How's your hearing? How's your hearing?" They say, "Oh, it's not bad." But when I'm in a restaurant, and so restaurants are always the example, and it's a place where there are lots of people talking. It's all in the kind of the same frequency range, and you can't hear the person you're talking to. The way restaurants take advantage of this is by they will crank the music as the night goes on to drive out older customers who tend not to drink as much and tend to linger over meals, and to even among younger customers to make it harder for them to talk, and so they, you know, they order more drinks because they don't get distracted by conversation. And one of the paradoxes is that even though sound levels, or it's like the number one thing that people complain about restaurants, even so, even people who hate loud restaurants will often avoid quiet restaurants because they think, this place is like sounds like the grave. It can't possibly be any good. Where are the decibels? Let's go eat someplace else.
Well, here's some news you can use from the book. You mentioned an app called SoundPrint that's specifically for noisy restaurants. How does that work?
It's like you can measure the sound level. It's like Yelp for decibels. And you can report it. You know, this is how loud this restaurant was. And so it doesn't help you here in the restaurant, but the idea is to apply some social pressure to places that are really loud. It's also the difficulty is compounded by the way that restaurants are designed nowadays. You know, there are lots of metal surfaces, hard surfaces. They're not carpeted. There aren't big curtains. There's not fabric draped across the ceiling. The kitchen is right out there in the open often. So there's lots of sound, echoing sound, and it's very hard to hear. I noticed one thing. I was having dinner in Texas with a group of people, and it was a long table, and I couldn't hear what people at the other end of the table were saying, and I assumed it was just because I was the oldest person there. But then one of the young guys sitting across from me had asked the other one, he said, "Can you hear anything that they're saying?" And he said, "No." He said, "I'm just nodding and pretending that I can hear them." And then he cupped his ears, and the guy sitting next to him said, "Well, does that work?" And he said, "Yeah, it works really well." So we all did it, and it was amazing. You know, it's like having this little superpower. We could hear not only what people at our table were saying, but what people at other tables were saying. So there, you know, we were boosting a natural ability of our ears. These odd outer portions of our ears actually help to funnel sound into this little tiny ear canal, and then into this even tinier, teensy weensy little receiver that's buried inside our heads.
Intelligent design, I suppose. If you're just joining us, our guest is David Owen. He's a longtime writer for The New Yorker and author of more than a dozen books. His new book is Volume Control, Hearing in a Deafening World. David, not only is your book packed with all kinds of technical information and talking about this very perhaps not intelligently designed auditory system within us, but it's packed with great stories about loss of hearing. And it just is no fair. Stephen Colbert, a very talented person and a wonderful singer, turns out lost hearing in one ear, one side, when he was young. Tell us about that.
Yeah, completely. He has no hearing at all on his right side. He had fairly common, or not unheard of, a benign tumor that had kind of engulfed his eardrum, and to remove it, they destroyed his hearing on that side. And to do this operation, it's interesting, they have to actually virtually detach the outer part of the ear, and then they put it back on. And if you look at pictures of Colbert, his ears look a little bit different. And when he was on Letterman once, he did a stupid human trick. He showed that he could tuck the tip of his ear into the ear canal and then kind of by wincing, make it pop out again. But he said he can't hear a thing on that side. When I first went to the doctor about it, the doctor ordered an MRI because it seemed to me that it was either entirely or mostly on my left side. And anything involving hearing that is on one side makes the medical professionals pay extra attention, because the danger is that there is something like what Colbert had, a tumor someplace in the auditory system. And if that's not addressed as quickly as possible, it can lead to very serious problems. And so I had this MRI, and it turned out that I didn't have that. But it's one of the things. One of the things they look for first. So there are all these. It was almost, working on the book was kind of frightening in one way, because first of all, the more you learn about hearing, the more you're amazed that it works. It's such a it's such a remarkable sense. And it's so complicated, so intricate, and then you think of all the dangers that are sort of poised around it to make it go away. There was one point where I thought, I don't want to learn anymore. The more I'm going to cause, it's like a tightrope walker looking down, who looks down and falls. And if I learn any more, I'm going to make my ears stop working altogether.
That's right. The tiniest bones in the body are in the ear canal, and the tympanic membrane, so very paper thin, in fact, thinner than paper. But we don't really evolve, do we? Our auditory system does not evolve as sounds get louder, as we listen to, you know, we have our earbuds in our ears more often. Does it? Or does it?
No, well, we haven't adapted yet. We haven't been making the loud sounds the way we have for very long in human history. And the first occupational sufferers, the first sufferers from occupational hearing loss were probably people pounding on metal, like tinsmiths and ironsmiths and church bell ringers, suddenly subjecting themselves to sound at levels that humans had not naturally been exposed to in over long periods of time. Some of the biggest sufferers were the people who made the boilers that powered the steam engines that made the Industrial Revolution possible. Often young boys inside these metal tanks, securing the inner side of rivets while people on the outside pounded on them with hammers, extraordinarily loud, and for hours at a stretch, and it harmed their hearing significantly, made them deaf very often, over years of exposure. We are better in many ways at protecting our hearing now and understanding the connection between sound exposure and hearing loss. But at the same time, our world is, we live in a very loud world. It's not just heavy metal rock bands and power tools. It's kind of everything all around us, especially people who live in cities, probably not so much in Park City, but on the streets of New York, the background level is literally deafening. Riding on the subway, the fire engine that gets stuck in traffic right next to you, right across from where you're standing on the sidewalk, and that siren at levels that if you are exposed to it for long enough, it could actually cause hearing loss.
So you talk about getting something called hearphones. They're Bose kind of headphones. And after reading your book, and because of all those examples you just mentioned, I thought, are we going to get to a point where people are just walking around with these ear protectors, earphones on to protect us from those things? Because it doesn't seem like laws and governmental regulations are keeping track with all of these new sources of loud sounds.
No, it's true. There are federal regulations involving sound levels in the workplace, and they were passed in the 1970s, a long time ago. But they're, even at the time, it was known that they were not sufficiently stringent to protect all exposed workers from hearing loss, and also they only covered certain industries. So there are lots of industries that are not covered: people in agriculture, people in lawn care, people who work on oil rigs, and anybody who's self-employed. But we should I think we should, everybody should, I now carry a pair of musicians' earplugs on my keychain. When my wife and I went to see the movie Dunkirk, which is basically a continuous explosion from, you know, from credits to credits.
So loud.
And it made it, I could listen and could also, while still hearing that, there wasn't a lot of dialogue in that movie, but I could hear it. And then I've also worn my earphones to movies. These are, they're headphones. They're not cheap. They're cheaper than hearing aids. It's $500. They have the same processor that hearing aids do, but because they're not made, because the priority was not to make them tiny, they have some capabilities that hearing aids don't. The sound fidelity is much better. They have the Bluetooth is more robust because the battery's bigger. They do noise canceling inside the ear canal, which is an amazing thing that I had never thought about. But one of the difficulties with putting things into your ears, including your fingers, if you stick your fingers in your ear and talk, or chew or walk along, there's this kind of booming sound caused by sound being conducted into your head through your bones and bouncing around in that ear canal. And so the earphones have noise cancellation inside. There's a microphone inside it to make the sound better, and they're great. I love them. The only problem with them is that, you know, you can see them, and I've worn them to restaurants before. But even though I feel that I'm very sort of rational about all this stuff, I still felt weird having them on in public.
Well, you talk about there are some stringent regulations in place, but I have to guess that they are rarely enforced. And I think about all the employers out there whose employees may have suffered some hearing loss due to something on the job. I mean, your condition was the result of a reporting trip to China. I had worked with a news photographer who went on a SWAT team training exercise, and they ran out of headphones, and they said, oh, stand in the corner, you should be fine. Well, the result of that is he now has tinnitus for the rest of his life. And when he was talking to me about it, it took him several months to bring it to our attention. And I said, that's a worker's comp issue. You know, it's affecting how he sleeps. It affected his job performance. And it was something that happened to him because he was on the job. And when you think about that employee or perhaps that student, you just wrote a story about New York City schools missing out by not testing their students for hearing impairments. I mean, it can cause some behavioral issues that can be resolved once you know what the source is.
It's so true. And, you know, students who are young students, right, elementary school students, toddlers who are misdiagnosed with learning disabilities, with autism, when the problem is a reversible hearing problem, it's missed. And New York City has, in 2009, stopped testing elementary school students for hearing loss. And the argument was, well, the causes, they're tested at birth and the causes later are almost always temporary conditions. But even a temporary condition can completely derail a child's life. If they can't hear at the time when they're should be acquiring language, it has lifelong consequences. The occupational losses, you know, the biggest occupational threat is in the military. The number one and number two service-related health claims made by American military veterans are tinnitus and hearing loss from exactly the same kind of exposure you're talking about, where exposure to the sound of war. And even when there's no gunfire, no artillery fire, military life is very loud. There are generators, and or soldiers on the rifle range. And there's, even though the connection between those exposures and hearing loss has been known literally for centuries, the military has been very slow to only really in recent, very recent years to make effective protection available to soldiers. There are hundreds of lawsuits going on right now between veterans and 3M and the Department of Defense over hearing protection that was provided to soldiers but didn't work if it wasn't inserted correctly. And the response of the Defense Department, you know, back to the time of the Civil War, has been more on compensation than on protection, so that the Department of Defense is the largest single purchaser of hearing aids in the country. The focus has been on how do we make up for this once we've done this damage rather than how do we prevent it in the first place.
Exactly. Our guest is David Owen. The book is Volume Control. And David, I feel like this was a call to action for yourself, but also for your many millions of readers. And so let's then help our listeners. We must destigmatize the hearing aid. We all have been sitting in meetings where you hear the squeaky, the feedback from a hearing aid, but the person who's wearing the hearing aid can't hear it because it's that perfect high pitch frequency that they can't hear at all. And so that on the extreme end of the spectrum, why I wouldn't want to have a hearing aid. Help us out. Help us destigmatize them and tell us how attractive those hearing aids can be.
Yeah, they are. I think one good thing about, you know, you walk down the street now, everybody has something in their ears. People, they have their AirPods or they have something on. And so you're not as conspicuous with something sticking out of your ear as you would have been not that long ago. That's a good thing. The bad thing is that very often those things that we see in people's ears are contributing to what will eventually be a significant hearing problem. I think that the main thing that we should all do is protect our hearing in situations where we're exposing ourselves at dangerous levels. And the shocking thing is that the danger level is much lower. Is turning out to be much lower than people had thought for a long time, so that you can do permanent damage to your hearing at lower levels of sound exposure than anybody had thought was the case. So we need to be more protective than we have been. My wife's hairdresser recently got bilateral hearing aids as a result of his professional exposure to blow dryers. You don't think of blow dryers as a hearing problem, as a cause of hearing problems. I always made fun of my wife for putting on earplugs when she used her food processor, but now I do too. I mean, so we should protect ourselves. And there are lots of inexpensive, effective earplugs and hearing protection devices. And then I think that the other thing is that when we notice a problem, or when our friends notice a problem in us, it's often a friend or a spouse who notices first, we should have our hearing tested and begin to take steps. It's partly, it may be hearing aids, it may be a different device. It also, there are ways to improve comprehension that don't involve devices. A scientist at a hearing aid company demonstrated that even people who have perfect hearing, we pick up something like 20% of our comprehension comes from unconscious lip reading. So, you know, learning to pay attention can help with understanding context, paying attention can help with hearing too. So there are lots of ways that we can compensate for these terrible things that we've been doing to ourselves.
You know, just like we wear our sunglasses and it's a fashion statement, at some point somebody's going to come up with some sort of earplug that protects our ears and looks good too. Hey, David, we've got about 30 seconds left. Just give our listeners a pitch for your book. Why should they read Volume Control?
I think, you know, the subject is so fascinating. Everything I learned led to something else interesting. So the history of sign language, the history of how just what sound is. What is sound? I didn't know, and it's fascinating and it's amazing, you know, that I could sit at my desk and I was thinking, you know, I can hear my typewriter keyboard. I can hear my wife talking on the phone around two corners in the kitchen. I can hear car traffic 100 feet away, even though the storm windows are closed, and then I can hear an airplane flying 6 or 7 miles overhead. How does my brain sort this all out and distinguish these sounds? And it's amazing. It's all done in this tiny, tiny little bit of complex neural infrastructure inside our heads, and yet we take it entirely for granted. So I don't think anybody will take it for granted again after they've read my book.
I agree. We've been talking to author David Owen. His new book, Volume Control, Hearing in a Deafening World. David, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
The Mountain Life.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows.
wherever you find your podcasts. You can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.